Something we'll be considering to a large extent in the coming chapters, including this one, is the concept of cooperation. In cooperation, what we have is more than one entity helping out each other. This can result in an increase in, for example, the functionality or the fitness of the entity that's being helped. It can also result in a decline in the fitness or functionality of the entity that's doing the helping. Generally, we see cooperation evolving within systems in which there's some kind of reproductive linkage between the individuals that in fact are cooperating. In this way, by giving to another, one can potentially enhance one's own reproductive success. And whenever that's the case, there is a reasonable probability that in fact cooperation can be stably maintained within a system. Going even further, we can look at our own bodies. Our own bodies consist of populations of cooperating cells. Most of these cells do not contribute to the next generation. Only the germline in our cells do that. However, by cooperating among themselves, they can increase the likelihood that, in fact, the body as a whole will successfully reproduce, since all of the cells within our body, more or less, possess the same genotype. As a consequence, by increasing the potential for the reproductive cells, the germline, to reproduce, we in fact are increasing, or our individual cells are increasing, their own likelihood that their genotype will be passed on to the next generation. Here in this chapter, we'll be focusing particularly on the evolution of cooperation within populations of microorganisms. In subsequent chapters, we'll be talking about variations on this theme, including in terms of the evolution of symbioses, the evolution of virulence, which has a surprising amount of cooperation involved in it, and also in terms of the evolution of greater size and complexity. Generally, what we have is a cooperative interaction in which there is an increase in fitness, but also potentially the converse, where there is a decrease in fitness, which we would describe as a defection, or instead as cheating. So in this chapter, what we'll be considering is, in fact, cooperation. So we consider cooperation especially as it occurs between the genomes associated with different entities. Now, these genomes aren't necessarily associated with separate organisms, though in fact they can be associated with separate organisms. So there exist a number of mechanisms by which genomes of two different organisms may come to cooperate phenotypically. So, for example, this can occur within a community, in which case you have more than one species cooperating, and that's described as a mutualism. You can have cooperation occurring within a population, so this would be cooperation among conspecifics. You can have cooperation as it occurs between a symbiont and a host. Now, these arguably are two different species. In some cases, it's more difficult to say whether or not they really are two different species, or instead two different entities that make up the same species. But nonetheless, if you have within an organism a host organism and its associated symbionts, you can have mutualistic cooperation going on essentially within the confines of an individual organism. You can have cooperation that occurs within a clone. This is something you see with multicellularity, again, referring to our own bodies. You have a bunch of cells that are clonally related. They're cooperating with each other to give rise to this multicellularity that has the function of generating the next generation via meiosis associated with the germline. You also have, for bacteria, for example, the formation of clonal microcolonies, and it's likely that cooperation occurs within these microcolonies, and that's something we'll be talking about in this chapter. You have cooperation that occurs within a cell. Now, this can be between the genes making up the chromosomes of the cell, or alternatively between an endosymbiont found within a cell and the host cell. And you can have cooperation occurring within a genome itself. Here you have two organisms that potentially have, in the cases of acquisition of genes, for example, from an endosymbiont, that have integrated together functionally, metabolically, to give rise to a cooperative interaction. Although you have cooperative behavior that occurs within the genes, even if those genes more or less or originated from the same organism or within the same organism. The question of how cooperation evolved is typically asked within populations, and so this would be among conspecifics. It is relatively not straightforward to consider how it is that two entities that you would think would be out for their own good would, in fact, be looking out for the good of each other, would be taking energy that they've taken in or taking risks in order to help another individual found within the same population. So, an important question, particularly within evolutionary ecology research, is how cooperation could possibly evolve within populations. And to a degree, the answer is the same as why cooperation would evolve within a community, as well as why cooperation can evolve within an individual cell or within the cells making up an individual. Generally, to the extent that the reproduction of two entities are linked such that helping a second entity by the first entity increases the fitness of the first entity, or at least that first entity's genes, then you have the potential for alleles that result in the first entity helping the second entity evolving within the population, becoming more frequent within the population. And this is another way of saying that genes or alleles that result in cooperative behavior can increase within a population, particularly if by being cooperative, the gene or individual actually increases its own fitness. There are many examples of between species mutualisms, so going beyond just within species, between conspecifics, even though that's where typically when one studies the evolution of cooperation in the strictest sense, that's where that typically is studied. But nonetheless, there's a lot of cooperative behaviors that occur between individuals that make up different species. So mutualisms generally are between species cooperative behaviors. And these can be between free organisms, or they can be between symbiotic organisms and their associated hosts. So you can have mutualisms where two different species, in some manner, are being helpful to each other, but they're not living quite as intimately together as a symbiont lives with its hosts. Or alternatively, you have all sorts of cooperative behaviors that occur between the microorganisms that are associated with larger organisms. The larger organism itself. These could be microorganisms that contribute nutrients. They can be microorganisms that contribute to the digestion of foodstuff. These can be microorganisms that help to protect the larger organisms. There's lots of examples of microorganisms that interact symbiotically with larger host organisms and do so in a way that's helpful to the larger host organism. And in fact, we'll be studying this concept in more detail when we look at a whole chapter on symbiosis. So we'll concentrate in this chapter on the evolution of cooperation, especially among conspecifics, so among individuals that make up the same species, though we'll also end with consideration of a between species example of cooperation, and particularly that gives rise to genome fusion between the two cooperating species. Cooperative behavior ultimately can be seen as something that occurs between genes. Now, these genes can be genes associated with different species, they can be genes associated with different individuals making up the same population. They can be genes associated with different cells, or they can even be genes that are found within the same genome. And we're going to start looking at cooperation actually in terms of genes that make up the same genome. In ways, this is perhaps simpler to see what's going on because it's based on the ideas that come from biochemistry rather than ecology. And to a degree, at least, biochemistry is easier to comprehend than ecology is. So we've got genes. So I've basically shown an operon here. So these could be a bunch of bacterial genes. Each of the boxes is an individual gene. and the genes are expressed and you end up with gene products. So these could be proteins. Here we're just going to consider that these proteins are enzymes. It makes it easier to conceptualize what's going on. And enzymes give rise to metabolites. So what we have here is a red gene, and the red gene is giving rise to a red gene product, and the red gene product is acting on something and giving rise to this red metabolite. And the red metabolite is serving as a substrate for this gene product, and in turn it gives rise to the yellow gene metabolite. This, or I guess it's an orange metabolite. This metabolite serves as the substrate for this yellow gene product, and in turn you have the generation of this yellow metabolite. Yellow metabolite serves as the substrate for the green gene product, presumably an enzyme, and what you end up with is a green metabolite, and that serves as the substrate for this blue gene product, which then generates this blue end product. So you've got genes that are interacting. They're not interacting directly, but instead they're interacting via their gene products. And what you have is a biochemical pathway here. And ultimately, you're starting with something and ending with something else. And the goal of this pathway is the production of whatever this end product is. So within this metabolic pathway, the functionality of the pathway is measured in terms of how much of this end product is produced. And in order for that to occur, you have to have something akin to cooperation going on between these different genes. If a gene, quote unquote, refused to produce a gene product, such as this yellow gene producing this yellow gene product, then the whole process would end right here. And as a consequence, you wouldn't have generation of this end product. So it requires cooperation, the production of gene products by all of these entities to get this end product. If these were genes found in different organisms, each of the organisms would have to contribute to this pathway, this metabolic pathway, by producing some kind of phenotype that allows the pathway to progress from wherever it starts to its endpoint. If this thing is not produced, then this metabolic pathway is not functional. And you can think of this as an assembly line. If one member drops the ball, I guess I should have put that in quotes, then there will be no end product. So greater functionality is the goal here. If everybody is cooperating, if all the genes are cooperating, then you end up with all the metabolites being produced and ultimately with the end product is the goal being produced. Now, an end product need not be a chemical. It can be simply reproduction. And if you have a lot of genes that are inputting to the reproduction of an organism, then ultimately you end up with whatever the progeny is, and that's the next generation. And thus, functionality is the same as fitness. Alternatively, you can have individual entities that are separate organisms and they are cooperating towards an endpoint that also is reproduction. But in this case, it could be reproduction of both of the entities as the endpoint. And both individuals can be putting towards the larger whole in order to make sure that you have a combined reproductive success of both individuals. This you would see when you have a symbiont interacting with a host in a mutualism where it's an obligate mutualism, and in fact the host can't survive without the symbiont, and the symbiont can't survive without the host. The host basically has genes that support the survival and reproductive success of the symbiont. The symbiont has genes that support the survival and reproductive success of the host, and the combination of those genes and their products, the cooperative interaction between, in this case, the two species, gives rise to an end product, which is the reproduction of each of the species. So this metabolic or physiological cooperation that we're seeing here is something that's occurring between or among genes. And generally, when we talk about cooperation in an evolutionary or evolutionary ecological sense, we're talking about the interaction between genes such that the product of one gene is being helpful to the product of another gene. Typically, we look at this within populations where the product of one gene is helpful to a gene or genes found in a separate individual, but we can also think about this as going on within an individual genome itself. The reason why it's difficult to conceptualize what's going on within a genome as cooperation is because obviously it's cooperation, because if one gene wasn't pulling its weight, the whole organism may not succeed in reproducing, in which case that gene loses. But that's really what we're talking about when we're talking about cooperation and its evolution. We're talking about situations where essentially there's a gene that, if it's not pulling its weight, then it can result in a loss of functionality. And often you will get evolution of cooperation in those circumstances where loss of functionality for some larger entity results in an inability of whatever is not re is refusing to cooperate to successfully reproduce. So within a genome, obviously everybody's dependent upon everybody else for reproduction. So obviously there's going to be cooperation. So the big question is, how do you get cooperation when things aren't quite so obvious? So what are the requirements for cooperation? So one of the requirements is that there's more than one entity involved in the process. In other words, you need to have cooperation going on between things rather than simply a individual cooperating with itself. Entities can be individual domains of proteins, so you can have two different parts of a protein that cooperate together in order to get a functionality. They can be individual genes within the same genome, such as we just looked at, or individual metabolic pathways, either interacting within the pathway or between pathways. You can have two different adaptations that interact with one another. Again, they can be within the same genome, within the same organism. They can be between organisms, they can be between species. You can have interactions between individual cells. You can have interactions between individual organisms. And you can even have interactions between groups of individuals that are cooperative. Now, this is potentially a little far-fetched, but again, it becomes less far-fetched when we set things up so that, in fact, cooperation is probable. And when that occurs, it often occurs in such a way that it obscures that what we're actually seeing is cooperation occurring between groups, because the cooperation is so complete within the individual groups that we don't even recognize them as groups. And so a good example of that are the cells making up a multicellular organism. When we look at ourselves, we don't say, aha, there's a trillion or so cells all kind of interacting cooperatively to make me. We just say, ah, there's me. But really, what we're talking about is a group of individuals that are cooperating with one another, our cells. And it's interesting to ask, why is it that they're cooperating with each other? And that's the kind of question that we're going to be trying to answer in this chapter. Entities typically must be physically co-located or otherwise able to communicate in order to cooperate. If they can't see or touch each other, they're not going to cooperate. Cooperation requires some degree of something being passed from one individual to another individual, even if they're not directly interacting with one another, even if just you have interaction between the products of individuals. You still have to have some kind of interaction. The individuals cannot be in isolation from each other and still be cooperating. So somehow the individuals, in order to be cooperative, must have an impact on each other. And communication, when we use that term, or when I use that term, I'm defining it very broadly. And so this means that basically one entity produces something that in some way interacts with another entity. It could be something chemical, it could be something physical. Doesn't mean that when one entity produces this thing and it interacts with another, then another in turn produces something that interacts with the first, and so on and so forth. Communication can be one way. But communication really is key in order for cooperation to occur. Cooperation is a social interaction. You have to have some kind of social interaction, some kind of interaction in order for cooperation to occur. The resulting interaction should give rise to greater functionality. If it doesn't give rise to greater functionality, then we can question whether the interaction is actually cooperation. If it results in a decrease in functionality, then it may be defection instead, which it essentially is the converse of cooperation. Functionality can be defined in terms of products that are produced. It can be defined in terms of behaviors. It can also be defined in terms of survival and reproduction of entities. So when you have a cooperative interaction, chances are the fitness of some individual is being increased. And when you don't have a cooperative interaction, that increase in fitness is not observed. Ultimately, we can define cooperation, therefore, in terms of fitness, if we're talking about biological entities. Or more generally, we can talk about this increase in fitness as associated with units of selection. So, units of selection are basically what natural selection is operating on to a large extent. So, typically, this would be an individual organism, although it could be genes that are found within an organism, and in some cases, it can be groups of organisms that serve as the unit of selection. But in any case, when we have cooperation going on, what we have is an increase in fitness that's associated with some unit of selection. In other words, when in the face of natural selection, given cooperation, there is greater reproductive success given that cooperation than in its absence. So here we have our situation where we have a metabolic pathway, we have our gene products, we have our metabolites, and we're defining that arrow there as representing some greater amount of cooperation. Now, I know the arrow looks exactly the same as all the other arrows, but we'll get to that in a second. So this is the converse situation where instead of that arrow looking like all the rest, it's smaller than all the rest. So this individual here, this gene product or this gene here, is not contributing as much in this example here as it is in this example here. And the result of that is that the amount of metabolite being produced is smaller. And therefore, since this is the input to the rest of the metabolic pathway, the ultimate end product is lower in its the amount that's produced. And so this is the endpoint. This is the representation of the functionality of the interactions that are going on. And the smaller triangle indicates that, in fact, there's less functionality than you see up here with the larger triangle. There's a line, an imaginary line, by the way, that's found right here that's separating these two groups of symbols. And so you can describe this individual as displaying less, sorry, more cooperation up here and less cooperation down there. And by displaying less cooperation, ultimately you're seeing less functionality. So this here, this the reduced size of this triangle represents the cost of reduced cooperation, reduced levels of cooperation. And individual behaviors, so in this case, these are the behaviors. And the outcomes are not fixed. So what this is saying is that you have one group here and one group there, and the behaviors seen up here are not identical to the behaviors seen down here. And in fact, again, the difference is found in these arrows right here. And as a consequence of the differences in the behaviors, what you have are differences in outcomes. And if these differences in outcomes are reflected in differences in fitness, then what you have is genetic variation that can be acted upon by natural selection, and you have at least the potential for this group to be selected over this group because this group is displaying a greater level of functionality. But it can be more complicated than that because different biological entities often can be defined in terms of different units of selection, smaller ones and then larger ones that are made up of the smaller ones. And you can have conflicts in terms of the fitness between the smaller units and the bigger units. And in this case, the smaller units can increase their fitness, at least in the short term, by not cooperating at the expense of the fitness of the larger unit. So while it's obvious that we have greater functionality here than we have here, and therefore this group here should be more fit than this group here, that says nothing about the fitness of the individuals making up this group, which may in fact be competing against variants found within the group that cooperate less or cooperate more. And this little arrow here can be described as cheating, and we'll see this little cheating in pointing to a number of different things in the course of this lecture. So the costs, the actions of this individual cost the group metabolically, so that there is a net cost that is associated with having a cheater in one's midst, because this individual is not contributing to the group's functionality as much as this individual is. Although there can be situations that are more complicated than this, where an individual can contribute to a group functionality in more than one way, in which case there's the potential for them to be not cooperative in one situation and to make up for that lower level of cooperation in that one situation with a greater level of cooperation in another situation. So it all gets very, very complicated very fast when you're talking about evolution of cooperation. When we talk about the evolution of cooperation, we're talking about the evolution of behaviors. Indeed, when we're talking about cooperation, we're talking about behaviors. And an individual can display basically three types of behaviors from the perspective of cooperation. These behaviors may represent a greater contribution in terms of cooperation. There may be no change in the contribution to cooperation relative to another behavior, or instead they may represent less contribution. And together these ideas we can think of in the same way as we think of mutations or horizontal gene transfer. Something can be beneficial, something can be neutral, something can be detrimental. A difference though is that rather than talking about the actor, as they're called, experiencing a benefit, experiencing a detriment. With cooperation, we're talking about some different individual or some different entity that is benefiting or not as a consequence of the behavior of another. So that behavior of another can be a greater contribution or a lesser contribution to some degree of cooperation. Typically, we would describe a greater contribution as cooperative and a lesser contribution as not cooperative, or in fact, a defection behavior or a cheating behavior. So greater cooperation is displaying behaviors that are higher on this list here. And in fact, typically we don't pay any attention to the equivalent of neutral contributions. A neutral contribution would be a contribution that's different, but it's the same level of contribution as previous. And we're talking about the evolution of cooperation. Typically, we'll look at alleles or consider alleles where the allele either contributes to a greater extent to cooperation or contributes to a lesser extent to cooperation. And again, these are behaviors that are affecting another. So when we talk about cooperation, we're talking about how another individual benefits from the contribution of this first individual, or instead doesn't benefit from that contribution. So we can talk about greater the possible functional outcomes that you see within a group of individuals. So the group can consist of two individuals or two entities, or more than two entities, and within that group you can have cooperators present or you can have defectors present. The action of the cooperators will be such as to increase the functionality of the group. So from functional outcome will be increased as a consequence of the action of a cooperator. So possible outcomes, it can be greater functionality, can be no change in functionality as a consequence of an individual's behavior, or instead can be less functionality. And again, now we're not talking about the cooperation of the group, we're talking about cooperation of individuals making up the group. If individuals making up the group display cooperative behaviors, make a greater contribution, then the group may display greater functionality. If the individuals in the group display lesser cooperation, make less of a contribution to the functionality of the group, then the group as a whole may display lower functionality. So we have functionality of the group, we have behaviors of the group, and we also have functional outcomes for the individual. So the individual can experience a greater functional outcome or greater functionality. They may display no change in functionality, or they may display less functionality. Now it's important to realize that the functionality here for groups may not necessarily be the same functionality as for individuals, or indeed they might be the same, or they might be some combination of not the same and the same. And as a consequence, it's possible for an individual, for example, to display greater functionality, while at the same time, due to that individual's behavior, the group displays a lower level of functionality. Or you can see the opposite of that. So it is possible to contribute to greater group functionality at the expense of reduced individual functionality. So here would be greater contribution resulting in greater group functionality, but the individual that's actually making the contribution has less functionality as a consequence. So again, let's talk about the differences between these three things. This is an individual's behavior. This is a consequence of that behavior as far as the group is concerned, and the group can consist of as few as two entities. And this is the consequence of this behavior on the individual making the behavior and the consequence, in fact, even if the group is increasing in functionality as a consequence of the individual's behavior, the individual itself actually may be displaying less of functionality. And when you have an individual displaying less functionality, while the group, as a consequence of its behavior, while the group is displaying greater functionality, then we call that altruism. So altruism is increasing a group or others' functionality at the expense of an individual's functionality. So again, an individual may display a behavior of greater contribution to functionality of others and therefore greater functionality of the group, but that can come at the cost of lesser functionality for the individual that's actually displaying that behavior. And we call that situation where the others benefit and the individual displaying the behavior experiences some cost, we call that altruism. So these ideas are only in conflict to the degree, that is the idea of an individual increasing a group's functionality at its own expense of its own functionality. These ideas are in conflict only if, in fact, individual functionality can be distinguished from group functionality. If it can't be distinguished, then an individual increasing the group's functionality will automatically be increasing its own functionality. And you see this when individuals sacrifice themselves for the sake of the survival of clone mates, where the survival of those clone mates because they're clones, they're the same genotype, basically represents the survival and potential reproductive success of the individual that sacrificed itself. And therefore, even though it's that individual is on a personal level displaying less functionality for its greater contribution, overall, its functionality is no different from that of the groups, and therefore the individual displays a greater functionality as a consequence of increasing the group's functionality. The more linkage, such as in terms of reproductive success, the less that a group and an individual will tend to evolve to be in conflict. So if you have the reproductive success of an individual being dependent upon the reproductive success of the group, then generally the individual will evolve to give a greater contribution to increase the functionality of the group because no matter the cost to the individual, the group's functionality is the same as the individual's functionality because their reproductive success is tied together. On the other hand, if the reproductive success of two entities, the group and the individual, are not highly tied together, then it is quite possible for an individual, in fact, to display greater functionality at the expense of the group functionality. So it's possible for an individual to display less of a contribution, but as a consequence, increase its functionality despite decreases in the group functionality. And we would call such individuals cheaters. So at one end of a spectrum, we have cheaters, which benefit as the group at the expense of the group, and we have altruists, which display a cost at the benefit as in the course of benefit of giving benefits to a group. And we also see individuals that have that their functionality is no different from that of the group, and therefore we really can't describe them exclusively in terms of altruism versus cheating, because if even if you are displaying a cost to displaying a cooperative behavior, if the group benefits and that benefit is identical to the individual's benefit, then that individual, in fact, is going to benefit anyway. So we have three things we're talking about here: altruism, where an individual displays a cost to the benefit of the group. We have cheating, where an individual is benefiting at the expense of a group, and then we have somewhere in between where individuals can in fact sacrifice themselves to the benefit of the group, but they don't really sacrifice themselves because their success is identical to the success of the group. And so trying to put some of these ideas in pictures. So what we have here is an individual, and we have here in the larger circle a group. And the green individual is in fact contributing to the group. That's what these arrows represent. And as the consequence, the group as a whole is a larger circle, indicating that it has greater functionality. Over here, we have an individual that's taking from the group, and that's why it's in red. These individuals over here on the left are green. This individual here on the right is red. It's taking from the group, and as a consequence, the group is less fit, and you're seeing this as a lower size of the circle that represents the group. So circle areas are an indication of the relative fitness of groups and individuals. So the groups are here and the individuals are here. And you can see that this individual here, even though its group is smaller, that individual actually displays a higher fitness than this individual does. And this is because this individual is a cheater. It's taking from the group. It's increasing its benefits to the detriment of the functionality of the group. Whereas this individual is increasing the functionality of the group, potentially at the expense of itself. This could be an altruist. And this could be a cheater. So higher fitness group due to the lower fitness altruist. And this individual is giving more than taking in, which is essentially the definition of an altruist. And this is a lower fitness group, the larger circle here, due to the higher fitness of the non-altruist, also known as a defector or cheater. These individuals are taking in more than they're giving. These individuals are like a cancer or a pathogen that's invaded a multicellular individual. This individual here is more like a normal body cell that's contributing to the functionality of the larger individual, the body. Although, if that individual, in fact, if its reproductive success is a function of the reproductive success of the larger group, it might be difficult to describe this individual strictly as an altruist. If its success, if its functionality is identical to the functionality of the group, then its sacrifice really isn't a sacrifice. It is instead just a contribution to the functionality of the group. So that's individual as a cheater. And this decrease in the size of this circle and the functionality or fitness of the group as a consequence of the presence of the cheater relative to this group which lacks this cheater, that decrease in functionality can be described as a cheating load. And this increased functionality due to all of these individuals that are giving more than they're taking can be described as a collective action. And the collective action results in greater functionality for this group. And again, that's shown with this larger circle. So we can talk about cooperation, we can talk about altruism. The two are not identical to one another, although there's a lot of overlap. So, in the context of evolutionary theory, altruism is defined as behavior that benefits others while costing self. In the context of human behavior, altruism implies a concern for the welfare of others as the motivation for that behavior. And this is how the term altruism is used in everyday language. Since benefits and costs are relative as well as local, altruistic behavior may be defined more precisely from the perspective of what's known as multi-level selection theory as behavior that increases the fitness of the group relative to other groups while it decreases the fitness of the altruist relative to others within the group. Now, altruism may not actually be something that's altogether common. Because typically the way we describe the evolution of cooperation, and here in this case, what we have is a group that's cooperating and therefore displaying a fitness that's higher than another group that's not cooperating with each other. This altruism is something, with this cooperation is something that we tend to see as evolving where it does not involve altruism, but instead involves an individual benefiting from benefiting the group as a whole. It may be dead when it receives those benefits. But it's receiving those benefits in such a way that, in fact, particularly its reproductive success is enhanced by its behavior, even if it looks like the individual is sacrificing itself for the sake of displaying that behavior. So altruism, it's an important concept, and it's an important for understanding the evolution of cooperation. But ultimately, we'll be walking away from the idea of altruism in a strict sense, because in fact, the individuals that seemingly are displaying altruism, typically for cooperation to be an evolutionary stable strategy, the altruist has got to be benefiting in some manner from what seems like a sacrifice. So there's no conflict as long as the individual and the group are fully reproductively linked. So in other words, it's not altruism if an individual sacrifices itself so that its clone mate can reproduce. It's only altruism if an individual sacrifices itself so that another can reproduce that is in fact not related or not closely related or not sufficiently related to the individual that's displaying the sacrifice. So we can look at interactions between individuals and we can ask whether or not the interaction has a positive effect or a negative effect on one individual as well as the other individual. And here we're talking about just two individuals interacting, an actor and a recipient. It's often very simple to think about these things in terms of two individuals relative to thinking about them in terms of more than two individuals. And we're talking about behaviors that either have a positive or negative impact on the actor and either a positive or negative impact on the recipient. If you have both individuals benefiting, then you describe that as a mutual benefit. In the case where one individual there's a cost to its behavior and another individual is benefiting from that behavior, that's the situation where we have altruism. It's also possible for an individual to do something that's beneficial to the individual that's doing it, that comes at the expense of another individual, and we can describe that as selfishness. When you have exploiter-victim interactions, such as predator-prey interactions, the predator is performing a behavior that has a positive impact on self. It's catching and eating another individual, and that has a negative impact on another, and we can describe that as selfishness. We can also fill in the rest of these boxes, or the one box remaining, with a behavior that has a negative impact on self and has a negative impact on other. We can call that spite, since that's like cutting off one's nose to spite one's face. It's costly to the self in cutting off the nose, just as it's also costly to the face as a consequence of the nose being cut off, to supply a morbid example. There aren't all that many examples of these kinds of negative results in evolution, in terms of the evolution of cooperation, because typically an individual is not going to take on a negative role in order to hurt another, unless the other is hurt more than self, in which case we can actually describe that as potentially a positive impact, a benefit, rather than a negative impact. Altruism, as we've noted, is not necessarily something that you see in the natural world, because the altruistic individual typically is going to be getting something back from its behavior, and therefore it really isn't a negative behavior, but instead a positive behavior. Ultimately, when we're talking about the evolution of cooperation, what we're looking for is the evolution of mutual benefits, where one individual performs a behavior that's helpful to another individual, and another individual, or the helped individual, performs a behavior that's helpful to the first individual. And together, both individuals increase in their functionality, increase in their fitness. And what we have, going back a slide, is a situation where the size of the group in terms of its functionality and fitness or fitness is greater than you see in groups where in fact you don't have this mutual cooperation going on, this mutually beneficial behavior going on. Where does this all lead? And the answer is that it leads to something called the prisoner's dilemma, or more specifically, one way of thinking about the evolution of cooperation is in terms of what's known as a game in game theory, called the prisoner's dilemma. Now, in the prisoner's dilemma, you have two individuals, or more than two individuals. You have one individual that displays one behavior, and that behavior affects another individual, the opponent, and the other individual also displays a behavior, and that individual's behavior affects the first individual. So in both cases, what we have are behaviors that are defined in terms of their impact on another, not in terms of impact on self, but in terms of impact on another. And so we are not going to actually see altruism here, except to the extent that it can be costly for an individual to help another if they're not helped back in return. So it's all about how the behavior that an individual has, how it affects another individual, and ultimately, how the mutual affecting of the other individuals results in an overall behavior. So the individual shown here on the left, that individual, this is essentially the actor, that individual can display a cooperative behavior, in which case that behavior benefits the other individual. Now, if that individual displays a behavior that benefits the other individual, and the other individual displays a behavior that benefits the first individual, then what you have is mutual cooperation. Both individuals are cooperating. And we give this a value called reward R for mutual cooperation. And that'll be a payoff value, a payoff to each of the individuals for not only participating in cooperation, but also the other individual participating in cooperation as well. Now, alternatively, it's possible to cooperate and for the other individual to not cooperate, in which case you have cooperation and defection interacting together. What we're talking about here is the payoffs for this individual. And if this individual cooperates but the other individual defects, then this individual receives what is known as the sucker's payoff. And the sucker's payoff, or S, basically this individual is experiencing some cost associated with cooperating, with displaying the cooperation behavior, and it's not getting any benefit from doing so from the other individual, which instead is essentially all taking and not giving. This individual is all giving and not taking. This individual is all taking and not giving. In this situation, this individual is giving and this individual is giving, so there's this mutual benefit. In this situation, this individual is experiencing cost, but not that individual. And in fact, we can show that situation from this individual's perspective. So we have a behavior of defection if this is coupled with the behavior of cooperation from the other individual. So it's essentially the same thing as we're seeing between here and here, except instead of looking at it from the perspective of the cooperators, we're looking at it from the perspective of the defector. So here we have what's known as T, or temptation to defect. So this individual is taking but not giving, and that individual is giving but not taking. So that's kind of good for this individual. So there's a temptation to do it. Alternatively, there's the possibility that in fact this individual will defect and this individual defect, and together that's called the punishment for mutual defection. So both defect, that's called mutual defection, both cooperate, that's called mutual cooperation. And this can be described as cheating, where an individual defects among cooperators. So we have these payoffs, R, S, T and P, and they're associated with these behaviors: cooperation, cooperation, cooperation by one, but defection by the other, defection by one, but cooperation by the other, and then mutual defection. It is a prisoner's dilemma when T gives you a bigger payoff than R, which in turn gives you a bigger payoff than P, which in turn gives you a bigger payoff than S. In other words, it's more beneficial to defect when others are cooperating than it is to cooperate when others are cooperating. That in turn is more beneficial than defecting when others are defecting, which in turn is more beneficial than cooperating when others are defecting. So in this case, defection is always preferable. So in the situation where the other individual cooperates, if you defect, then you receive in a reward T greater than the reward if you cooperated. And similarly, if the other individual defects, then you receive a reward for defecting, this punishment for mutual defection, that nevertheless is greater than the payoff for cooperating with the defector. So it's always preferable to defect. If the other individual is cooperating, it's preferable to defect. If the other individual is defecting, it's preferable to defect. And this can be described as T is greater than R, T is greater than R, and P is greater than S, P is greater than S. So the big question then is, if it's always preferable to defect, why cooperate? That is, why display behaviors that give rise to the payoff of R or S rather than displaying behaviors that give rise to behaviors of T or P, even though P is always greater than S and T is always greater than R? Now, in order for a individual to be within a population or group of cooperators, you've got to somehow reach a point where you have mutual cooperation going on. But this comes at the potential cost of instead experiencing the sucker's payoff, because there's always this temptation to defect. Alternatively, if you have populations that are not trying to cooperate at all, then all you get is the punishment for mutual defection. Now, this 2x2 matrix may look familiar. In fact, we've, in a previous chapter, looked at something similar to this. But what it more recently looks like is this. However, this table here is not equivalent to that table there. In fact, you would have to flip these two in order for it to be equivalent. And why is this so? Because what we're seeing here is the effects on the individual who is displaying the behavior. So the individual is either experiencing a positive effect, or the individual's experience a negative effect on itself, a positive effect or negative effect on itself. By contrast, what we're describing here is a positive effect on the other, or a negative effect on the other. And similarly, cooperation is a positive effect on the other, and defection a negative effect on the other. So these two tables are not equivalent, because in this table, we're looking at the impact on the actor. And in this table, we're looking at whether the behavior has a positive or negative effect on the actor. And here we're looking at whether the behavior has a positive or negative effect on the recipient of the actor's actions. So examples of prisoner's dilemma. So the classic example is you have two prisoners and they have a dilemma because they've both been caught for a crime, and they can either confess to the crime or not, and they've been separated, so they don't know what each other's actions are going to be. Not confessing to the crime is considered an act of cooperation, whereas confession is defection against the other prisoner. If both individuals don't confess, then they still are sent to prison, but they have a light sentence because basically there's not enough evidence against them to convict them for the major crime. If both individuals confess, then they're both sent to prison for a longer time because they have supplied evidence that they committed the crime. If one individual confesses and the other doesn't confess, then the individual that confesses doesn't go to prison, but the individual that doesn't confess gets the longest of the possible prison sentences. And so here we have the temptation to defect, because if you confess, you can get off scot-free, but it comes at the cost of, if your opponent confesses also, you get a longer prison sentence than if your opponent does not confess and you don't confess either. And the worst possible case is if you don't confess and your fellow partner in crime does confess. Anyway, little complicated and perhaps a bit contrived. So here's some more down-to-earth examples of prisoner's dilemma. So a prisoner's dilemma. So driving an SUV. I know SUVs, at least to a degree, are going out of style, but I came up with this example before, in fact, the world even knew about Hummers. So you're driving a Hummer, and you're driving a Hummer because if you get in an accident, you don't want to die, and you don't really care if the other individual dies. The cost of driving a Hummer, however, is lower fuel economy. If only both individuals drove small cars, then they get in an accident. They wouldn't necessarily kill each other. They might both get injured. That would be mutual cooperation. They're benefiting from driving smaller cars, which are more economical. But in the situation where both individuals drive Hummers, then when the Hummers collide, both individuals get just as hurt as they would if two smaller vehicles collided, but there's the larger expense of driving a Hummer. It's less economical. And of course, the worst situation of all is to get in an accident when you're driving a small vehicle with a Hummer. The Hummer basically is all but scratched, the small vehicle totaled, and the individual in the small vehicle perhaps is dead. That's the sucker's payoff. The temptation to effect is driving the Hummer. Mutual cooperation is both individuals driving the small cars, and mutual defection is both individuals driving the Hummer. And this is just in terms of economy and in terms of the likelihood of surviving an accident. If you're talking about prestige, the results may come out differently. Aggressive behavior. So you're carrying a gun, and another individual is carrying a gun. Well, if you meet in an alley, you might shoot at each other. Both of you, might get injured, might die, who knows? If you meet in the alley and one of you is carrying a gun and the other individual is not, then the individual who's not carrying the gun is much more likely be the one that dies. That's the sucker's payoff. The temptation to defect is carrying that gun. If both individuals are not carrying a gun, however, you have a situation where the individuals are not going to pull out guns at each other when they are meeting in this dark alley, because in fact they're not carrying guns. But there are costs associated with carrying guns, and these costs are such that, in fact, you might have a higher rate of suicide. You might have a higher rate of your loved ones accidentally killing each other or killing a loved one. There's the cost of buying the guns, etc., etc. So it's really the greatest benefit in terms of conflicts between individuals comes when one individual is carrying a gun and the other individual is not carrying a gun. When both individuals are carrying guns, there's a reasonably high likelihood that both individuals, in fact, will be injured or killed in the exercise. The greatest benefit for both individuals can come when both individuals, in fact, are not carrying guns, but an even greater benefit can come, especially if you're trying to be aggressive, if you're carrying a gun and the other individual is not. Not paying taxes. So you've got a whole system set up that, in theory, is supposed to be benefiting all of us. If you're not paying for the system, then you're getting benefits without actually paying for those benefits. And so you're taking in without putting out. And so in this case, that would be the temptation to defect, to retain receiving society's benefits, the government's benefits, without actually paying for government. Whereas the suckers are the individuals that, in fact, are paying for government despite the fact that others are not paying their taxes. It would be mutual cooperation if both individuals paid their taxes, or the entire society paid their taxes, as well as receiving the benefits. And you can see that things can be pretty bad in situations where, in fact, nobody pays their taxes because there, in fact, therefore would be no government at all. It could be argued in this case that this is not quite a prisoner's dilemma, but instead an example of a game of chicken, where, in fact, if you have nobody paying taxes and therefore nobody getting government benefits, it might be worse than having government benefits and paying taxes, but still having those benefits. And then we have cancer, where essentially we have cells in the body that have gone rogue, and they are benefiting from being in the body, but they're not contributing to the body's functioning. And so, as a consequence, there's this temptation to defect, which is being a cancer cell. The sucker's payoff is at least arguably where you're a normal body cell, and there are cancer cells in your midst. So you're not stealing your more than your share from the body. But at the same time, you are having to deal with the costs associated with there being cancer cells around. The ideal situation is where you have a mutual benefit, where in fact you have no cancer cells around and you just have normal body cells that are cooperating. And a bad situation, of course, is where there's nothing but cancer cells around and the body simply is not able to function, and therefore the cancer cells are not able to function. You again can describe this potentially as a game of chicken, where you have essentially the sucker's payoff being a normal body cell and a still functioning body, but despite the fact there's cancer cells around, being a better payoff than being a cancer cell in basically a body that consists of nothing but cancer cells, nothing but defectors, in which case there is no body functionality, and essentially those cancer cells are dead no matter what. So I've described situations that can be considered in terms of cooperation and defection. I've at least tried to describe them in terms of prisoner's dilemma, and I've pointed out situations where, in fact, it may not be quite a prisoner's dilemma, but instead something called a game of chicken, where the sucker's payoff is preferable to actually having individuals be mutually defecting. The actual game of chicken comes from where you've got two cars driving down the road towards each other in a contest, and essentially the cooperative behavior is to swerve. And so, if the other individual swerves and you don't swerve, then you get the benefit of prestige from having not swerved. If both individuals swerve, neither individual dies. If you have the situation where you swerve but the other individual doesn't swerve, then you lose face. But all of those are preferable to the situation where neither individual cooperates, they collide and both die. So a game of chicken, the mutual defection, neither cooperating, is worse than experiencing the sucker's payoff where you swerve out of the way, but at least you don't die.